Hello and welcome to The Permabyte for March 10th, 2014, presented by The Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This episode is a retrospective of my trip to a gathering of the Farmers Conference, an agricultural revival, organized by Certified Naturally Grown, in cooperation with Wilson College and the Fulton Center for Sustainable Living. Before I begin, I'd like to thank all of the listeners who have taken the time to help spread the word about the show and to support it. This project continues to be listener-supported, and I really appreciate all of your help in making it continue to happen, as well as your ongoing feedback to produce shows such as this. I value your time and what you are able to contribute to the show, so please, if you would like to email or call me, please do. I'll include that information at the end of the show. Or if you would like to help support the show financially, you can do so by going to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support and find out how. I had a lot of fun at a gathering of the Farmers Conference. I got to go and learn more about Certified Naturally Grown and the stories of a number of farmers. For that reason, I'd like to thank Alice Verone, the executive director of Certified Naturally Grown, as well as Elizabeth Weller, one of the members of the organizing committee. Both of them helped get me all the information that I needed in order to be able to go and participate. I'd also like to thank the rest of the organizing committee for all the hard work that they put into making this happen. Also, Mr. Brian Snyder, who is the executive director of PASA, for his keynote speech. It served as a nice basis for what I wound up speaking about later as part of my workshop as an introduction to permaculture. Also, Ryan, who was one of the members of the organizing committee, is a listener to the show, and he's the one who emailed me and mentioned that it would be interesting to have me down and possibly to do a Permaculture 101 workshop, which then I kind of volunteered myself for. So Ryan, thank you very much. It was nice to meet you and to get to hang out and talk. I look forward to some more of the work that we can do in the future. And I gotta say, it wouldn't have been nearly as much fun if it hadn't been for Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir. They gave an incredible performance. They were very generous with their time, including joining everyone at the bonfire afterwards for celebration and community, as we stood around and ate chili and talked and got to hear some of their stories of being on the road as performance artists and activists. And they were really just a nice group of people. And if you get a chance, I really recommend seeing them. It was a fun time. For me, though, the part that really stood out more than anything was at the beginning of the conference when we sat down to listen to the short takes on real-life farm life, when 10 farmers joined us to tell their stories about what it's like to be on the farm. Each farmer combined 20 pictures, which transitioned every 18 seconds to give us about a 6-minute presentation. And that kicked off with Sarah Bay from the Fulton Farm at Wilson College, talking about what it's like to operate that farm and their talking scale that they use, well, that they used because he had died just recently, that poor scale. But this talking scale that they would use to measure different things and the way that it would work. And it became a very humorous story about this piece of cranky equipment and what it added to their experience on the farm. I'm not gifted with humor the way that Sarah is, but she used that scale to talk about all of the joys and pleasures of working the farm. And then Rebecca Krug joined us to talk about what her life is like as a nomadic farmer, both in the United States and internationally. And it made me think about all the people who are doing international permaculture. And when you're out there doing that work, when we think about combining indigenous wisdom with scientific knowledge, that the farmers in local communities where we are can provide us a lot of information about what they do and how they do things. To hear those stories of elders in an area and how they work. And though I have sometimes a bit of a concern about exporting Western ideals to other countries, when we go to an area and operate from a place of a humble desire to learn, there's so much that we can do to build community and interact with one another in a way that doesn't because I like this term, inflict ourselves on others. And I really appreciated Rebecca's story and some of the trials that she's gone through in order to share and explain with her family and others this idea of being a nomadic farmer. Thinking about how many of us are told the stories of what we should do or the world that we should inhabit, how we're to be a part of the stories of others. And here is this incredible, vibrant young woman going out and doing what she wants and making a difference and learning the things that she wants to do. Unlike so many of us, I guess, who find those paths later in life. You know, I was about 30 when I really found what it was I wanted to do. Or I think about one of the conference participants who I met, who was 50 before he found what it is that he wanted to do, which then turned into a conversation about cars. And Chuck, I don't know that you're ever going to hear this, but thank you for that. From Rebecca, then JJ Dabbs came and talked about his work on a farm making cheese. And in his story, I heard about how on his farm, they wind up stacking functions, that they milk the cows and use that milk to produce cheese, but then that whey is fed to their pigs. These glorious, beautiful little whey-fed pigs. They just looked happy in the pictures that JJ shared with us. But he also talked about his joys as a farmer and how, though it might not seem like being out there in the middle of winter to feed his pasture-raised cattle was all the fun and joy of farming, but the pleasure that he took in it, to be out there taking care and tending those animals. And one of his pictures was a selfie with him and one of his cows as they were working on nursing her back to health. And I think looking at culture and society and all the pictures that we take, all those self-portraits that go up on social media, and there was a man taking one of those pictures with something, no, taking those pictures with someone that he loved and cared for, that care for other life beyond our own, to all life that we care for as part of that ethic of earth care. After JJ was David Dietz of Dietz Produce, talking about avian mobile homes, which the next episode after this for March 11th is going to be a follow-up with Wayne Herring from Herring's Green Grass Farms. And if you listen to the Q&A that I had with Wayne a while back, many of the things that Wayne talked about I heard reiterated in David's story about raising and taking care of chickens and all the different ways that he was building chicken coops and learning from how to make them work and how one of his mobile coops collapsed because of the recent heavy snowfall that we had had in Pennsylvania. Now, thankfully, none of his chickens were harmed, as he wasn't using it to house any of them when it occurred, but just the way that we respond to these issues, the way that we use what we have around us to build the things that are necessary to do what we want to do, and then learn and grow from that. Next was Hannah from the Gleaning Project of South Central PA, and I'm hoping to interview her. I gave her one of my cards because I'd like to speak with her more about this project. Having done some volunteer outreach with organizations that use donated food or food that is collected from farmers markets at the end of day, because I'm really interested in the Gleaning Project and what they're doing to take food that would be waste, that isn't acceptable for canning or sale at a market or even a farmer's market, and putting that fresh, real food into the hands of people who need it, people in need, getting it included in food banks and other places where people can get access to it rather than seeing it used as waste. On a small scale, you know, we compost and we do good things in our zone one and zone zero. But here is a way to go out into community and do more. And I'm wondering how permaculture practitioners can use their other surpluses to engage with systems and services like this. Then Molly McCullough and Ben Corrado talked about Real Food Farm and Civic Works in Baltimore, and they're doing education and outreach in the urban environment, as well as urban agriculture, in a real and meaningful way. And I think that they have a model that would be really, really useful for people who are interested in doing this kind of work elsewhere, I talk a lot about finding your own niche, about finding a place where you can fit in and apply the ethics of permaculture to the work that you're doing. As one of my instructors says, if you know how to do something, do that. Don't try to rewrite the manual every time. Find the things that you're good at, or to borrow from the idea of writing, write what you know, do what you know, and apply permaculture to it. And I think that there's a lot of room for people who are doing nonprofit work, who are organizing, who are civic leaders, or living in a city and interested in agriculture, that there are ways to use many of the ideas that Molly and Ben have with their work to create more of these systems elsewhere. After that was Mike Nolan of Earthspring Farm, and he talked about the revival of the small farmer and what it was like to transition to farming when he returned to the central Pennsylvania area 5 years ago in 2009 and bought the farm and began doing this work. The more that I get to know the organizations and the people who are doing real on-the-ground organic and sustainable farming, the more that I realize the number of people who are out there who want to do this and either are trying to figure out how or are struggling to make the transition to do it. And Mike really reminded me of why it's so important for us to, if we're not growing all of our own food, be buying from our farmers at the farmers markets, to be joining CSAs of all varieties, whether that's a meat CSA, a vegetable CSA, if you're getting your milk, your eggs from your local farmer, that building those relationships are part of our social and economic permaculture. They build community, they build connections with the people around us that help support, sustain, and then regenerate the things that we do and the things that we care about and we love about the world. We all have to eat, and food is one of the best places to start engaging the system that is and help to change the dialogue. Next was Judy Raydell of Yeehaw Farm, who's Judy, I've had the pleasure to meet a couple of times, and I love her and the work that her family are doing on their farm. She is a multi-generational farmer. 4 generations, if I remember right, on the same farm. 320 acres in Perry County, Pennsylvania. And if I'm remembering right, the only thing that they import to their property for their animals, other than the fuel to run the equipment, are minerals and baking soda. Their cows, their chickens, their turkeys, their pigs, everything that they raise on the farm comes from the land that they're on, and it supports them and gives back to their community and allows them the opportunity to also do things like yesterday when Judy came down and gave her presentation. I was on her farm when Oxfam brought Susan Godwin in, and I took a tour of Judy's farm. And it was the first time that I ever got to hear the stories about someone who cared so much about their animals and the work that they were doing to make their farm a better place for everyone there. It was a biocentric perspective that involved the farm. And it was a pretty incredible experience. And that meaning and that value that I learned in my experience on Judy's farm was what she shared with us, the values of farmers, of tradition, of a lifestyle that matters, and why, again, our small family-owned farms matter. We have to invest in the things we love. And every time I meet more farmers who are doing this kind of work, I love it. I love what they're doing. And I want them to succeed because they're in a place to respond and really help to build a better world, the kind of world as permaculturists we talk about, and they can't do it without us. Which is why, if you've never been to a farm to see the caring small-scale operations, you should. And it's one of the things that I liked about the next presenter, Sally Voris, of White Rose Farm and her work, to introduce people into the farm. Because of what she's raising and her background as a storyteller, that she's creating a space where people can come and see it, interact with it, and then fall in love with it and take some of that home with them and begin making a difference. The last of the presenters was Ben Wenk of Three Springs Fruit Farm. And I apologize to Ben. I had to step out during his presentation, so I didn't get to hear as much of this as I wanted to. But what I did hear was his passion for what he does, the pride that he takes in his work. And I found his pride to be an infectious and powerful thing, because it came from such a personal, joyful space to hear him talk about it. And after watching my friend John, who joined me as a photographer, eat apple after apple after apple that Ben brought with him, that pride is also turning into incredible fruit, wonderful, nutritious food that feeds the body, the community, and the people that Ben serves. Now that I've kind of walked through all of these pieces, I come back to that side of myself that loves people and their stories, and share the impressions that they left on me. Because these were just 10 farmers talking about their work out of thousands just in the United States. Not just thousands, tens of thousands. And more small-scale farmers who are doing good work that is aligned with the community of permaculture practitioners. And that's a space where we can go and engage other people and work with them and help them to succeed in a way that cares for the earth, themselves, and each other. So find your small local farmers and connect with them. Find organizations like Certified Naturally Grown that are helping farmers to have the labeling and certifications that help consumers find products in the marketplace easier, and that meet with many of the long-term goals that those who know and care and think about these things have, but that folks who are involved in the mass market and consumption of food might not know about without organizations like Certified Naturally Grown helping to promote this good work, or the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, for which Mr. Brian Snyder is the executive director, and myself and my photographer John are both members, because we care about this kind of stuff, so we invest in it. And by connecting with these organizations, we find so many other events and places where we can plug in and learn more and help to build a better world. Thank you for joining me for this PermaBite, presented by the Permaculture Podcast for March 10th, 2014. If you have any thoughts after listening to this about ways that you engage or are making a difference with the farmers around you, or you'd like to meet some of these farmers because you've happened to have heard of their projects and are near them, please let me know. You can reach me by email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a call, 717-827-6266. And if there's anything that you know about as a listener to the show that's within a couple hours radius of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that you'd like me to cover, let me know. I'm interested in more of these live events because of what it adds to the conversation about getting to meet people in person and see their facial expressions and get to interact with them. I also want to be able to take my photographer John with me when I go to these kinds of things so that they are fully documented by someone who is much, much better with a camera and has the equipment to make that happen, and allow me to just focus on doing what it is that I do, which I still don't know what to call what exactly it is that I do, but it is what I do, and I love it, and I want to keep doing it. But in order to do that, I need your support. That's what allows me to hire John and invest in John when we go to these events, by paying him a reasonable wage. Go to www.thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. There, you'll find some drop-down boxes where you can make a recurring monthly donation. And $5 a month, which comes to $60 a year, that $60 will help to pay for a month of website hosting. If you donate $10 a month, $120 a year, that would allow me to hire John for a day to go and take pictures, and then also cover his time afterwards to review process and prepare the pictures for posting and publication. I'm going to do a permabyte here in a couple of days that talks about what your support goes for, what I'm using it for. But to wrap this up, since I'm already at quite a bit at this point, just know that I'm not running off and using it for conspicuous consumption. I believe in what you donate to the show as an investment in the podcast and the permaculture community as a whole because of the work and outreach that's involved with it. So I'm doing everything I can to honor that and take care of it in a meaningful way and do good with it in the world. Thank you for our time together today. I will be releasing another show tomorrow, March 11th, 2014, with Wayne Herring. So tune in then, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye.